Seven players in the penalty area not marking Borussia brings you.
Phoenix City!
Welcome to Phoenix City. I'm Frosty. I'm joined by Cam and Ella, as usual. No, Dave.
Good evening.
Hello.
And we have a special guest in the house, one Sean Gill.
Evening, guys. How are we all?
I said, like I said, guys, because Ella's probably the only woman that listens to us.
I know. It's kind of a good generic term, though, to be fair.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, yeah, that's a loaded term in my industry. Thanks for coming on, mate.
No worries. Good to be here.
Yeah, first time, and which is saying something for a man of your long-standing years in the Knicks.
Football operations like to live in the shadows, if we can.
Yeah, I certainly get that impression. Most people don't know you by anything other than there's Gilly.
Yep.
And this jacket will walk past and talk to someone in another jacket.
Or on the TV, on the bench in the weekends when we're away. There's that too.
Yeah, a lot of the time it seems to be you see that you'll know, recognise the back of Gilly's hands from where they're covering his face. So anyway, let's jump into who is Sean Gill and what does he do? Football operations manager. That's a nice generic term, isn't it?
It is a nice generic term, and it covers a multitude of things, actually. So basically, Football Operations Manager with the Phoenix incorporates the management of the football side of the club to a certain extent. Obviously, you know, the head coach is an integral part of that and manages, you know, the staff from a technical side of things and obviously the football side of it with the players and whatnot. And I guess my role is largely a support role to those guys. It involves the management of the budgets, you know. So I'm the guy that, I guess, is a bit of doom and gloom a lot of the times. You know, can we have this? Can we have that? Yes, you can have that. No, you can't have that.
No, you can't sign Messi.
Yeah, exactly. So look, it covers a raft of things. Obviously, the main things are to make sure we work into the budget that's set by the club for football operations and for player budget. And within that, you know, there's a raft of things. You know, the medical side of the club, making sure that they're doing what they should be doing within the budget that they've got. And then, you know, the travel side of things. What else is in there? The player roster, making sure that fits and that works within the salary cap side of things. So, yeah, it's pretty all encompassing, but it's fun. Yeah,
it starts to sound a whole lot like basically everything between everyone else's job. That's you.
Correct. To a certain extent, yeah. I mean, for me, it really is a support role. You know, I see myself as more making sure that the staff have got what they need to do. What they need to be able to then give the players what they need. And I think that's the best way to look at it. It's not about me. It's about giving those guys all the tools that they need to make sure that team's performing on the weekend to the best that they can. So that's largely what it's about on my side of things anyway.
So you're probably the longest standing Phoenix
Scary, eh?
Yeah, staffer.
Yeah.
By I would say a long stretch by only, my reckoning.
Outside the office by a long way.
Yeah.
Yeah, only... Oh, actually, no, because Greeny was playing, wasn't he?
And then
Greeny's
been around the traps for a long, long time.
Yeah, yeah. But as far as in that back office, it's pretty much you, isn't it?
By a good couple of years. Well, obviously, Damien's been around since
29,
just about
29, 20, 2009 or 2010. He wasn't there first season, but I think he was in there from the second season.
Yeah, so
you joined the last year of Terry's.
So my first year was Ernie's first year.
Oh, right, okay.
So, but prior to that, was doing the role with Team Wellington. So when was that?
That was 2010. Yeah, I met you 2011, so 2011.
2010, so that's when Miramar took over Team Wellington after a bit of a sort of unsuccessful attempt at spending a bit of money by Team Wellington that year to try and win it. So And I think it was the following year, 11-12 was the year we Calcott was the coach, and we sort of went after the under 20 boys from the 2011 World Cup in Colombia. Nick Branch, Dakota Lucas, Ethan Galbraith was another one, and we sort of tried to sell those guys, come to Wellington. You know, you'll be in the backyard of the Phoenix. It was actually a pretty good year that year. We got to the final, lost to Waitakere narrowly. Dakota Lucas should have had a goal. Yeah. They should have had a player sent off first half. But anyway, that's football, isn't it? And then the following year, 12-13, was actually based off what we'd sort of done there with those young guys. We then were around the table with the Phoenix looking at the Football School of Excellence. So even though I think officially started 2013 or something, once Mal left, we've sort of been in there for a year, year and a half, doing that Football School of Excellence. Actually had a seat in the office down at Vivian Street it was then. Johnny Schmidt used to say the poor cousin in the corner.
Yeah.
it's been a while. It's been a while.
So you obviously have a bit of a passion for football.
Yeah.
You still get the boots on?
Not so much these days. I still sit on the list of the Waterside Quarry Dreamers. But unfortunately, sort of football and life gets in the way of it. Funny story, the last time I put the boots on was a staff football game in Sydney at our camp up at Sydney Olympic Park, and did a hamstring after 5 minutes. So maybe that's saying something, right?
You fit in quite well in this pod.
Weekend warriors. Alex excluded, to be quite frank.
She's the only one amongst us, including Dave and Patrick, who has any footballing talent and still plays.
She's also 20 years younger than me, but that's an aside. So you have a fair amount to do, not just during the actual season, but preseason, things like scouting and dealing with agents, and that's kind of in your remit as well. Yep. And that's kind of, I guess it's a bit of a mystery to a lot of football fans. We know that things happen. We don't know why, and we don't know the ins and outs of it a lot. Can you give us any kind of insight into that part of running a football club?
Yeah, so I guess the preseason is actually probably one of the busiest times of the year, to be fair, from a football operations, and even for Ulfie, you know, it's, or the coach at the time, it's that's where all the hard work's done, to try and set yourself up for the season. And this one particularly was a long one. I think we started with 7 players contracted for the first day of preseason. So yeah, a lot of work had to be done, which means a lot of emails and a lot of WhatsApp messages from agents from all parts of the world.
Is that something that happens more often than not, that they contact you rather than you go after particular players? You know, what's the kind of ratio of you going out and them coming in?
Yeah, it's probably evolved over time. Over the 6 years that I've been doing the job, you know, when I first started, obviously you don't have as many contacts as what you do 6 years into a job. So it's a bit of both these days. You know, now we've got some good contacts around the world that we are able to pick up the phone and say, look, we're looking for this, we're looking for that. You know, do you have any players that fit that mold, fit that budget? But there's still also a lot of unsolicited stuff that comes through. And the thing is, you can't ignore the unsolicited stuff. I remember when we signed Roland Bonavasia, basically an email came out of the blue from an agent in Holland, and it was like, whew, that's a pretty decent CV. You know, forwarded across the journey at the time, and it was like, wow. Yeah. And then conversations happen from there, and away you go. So it's a bit of both, you know. I guess the nature of the A-League and the sort of short nature of the contracts mean that it's not something where you're actively planning years ahead. You know, you're largely sort of looking at what's available at the time you're looking, I guess, to a certain extent, particularly from a foreign market. You know, obviously the New Zealand market's different. We've got an eye on that through the academy boys, through our own knowledge of what's in that market. The A-League's a different kettle of fish as well. We get it out of contract list all the time. We see all the players that are playing. with the Australian coaches that we've had, obviously they have a knowledge of that market as well from their time in those places. So the foreign market is a little bit what comes in the email, but also now, you know, what contacts you've made. Yeah, for example, with Maddie Steinman, he came through from an agent. Unfortunately, we'd just done the deal with Sapri to Bayern Munich at the time, and we'd actually
got a pretty good relationship with the guys. They were, you know, very pleased with the way the club handled things. You know, thought we were professional, which is good to hear from a club like that. So we actually reached out to one of the guys that we'd done a lot of work with on the deal and said, look, we're looking for this, we're looking for that. And he sent through a whole list of players. But then Matty Steinman came up and we actually, I phoned him and I said, look, do you know anything about this guy? He happened to be sitting beside the coach at Hamburg, one of the coaches that was at Hamburg at the time that had gone to Bayern Munich. So he put me on the phone, blah, 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 Matty Steinman, this, that, everything else. And basically that endorsement was sort of the final tick in the box that said, hey, this is the way we need to go, you know. So it's good. So now we've, you know, we have built up a pretty good database of agents that we trust overseas. But obviously it comes down to also whether their clients are available at the time or not.
So obviously Matty Steinman, a bit of serendipity going on there. Obviously there's the other side of the coin where you're getting a situation where you're chasing the less available kind of roles like strikers. Can you give us an idea of how many players you basically were in your serious look at list for striker this year? You know, obviously we were looking for a visa striker. I don't think anyone kind of made any bones about that. And, you know, there are always rumours going around that looking at so-and-so, or, the, you know, what kind of number of serious contenders were there?
I'd need to check with Chiefy because he sort of puts everything together on a list for us. But I think in total we probably had 450 visa players that came through email contacts that went onto a list. Now, that's obviously not all strikers because we were looking for other positions at the same time. But, look, at a guess, I would say we're probably – there would be 150 to 200 nines on that list that we thought were good enough to put on the list and at least have a look at. So there's a lot of work that goes in there because, yeah, it's not the case these days where you get a YouTube clip and you have a five-minute look at that and then you go, You know, we've got some web-based platforms. Instat's the one we use at the moment, which – basically provides you a whole history of that player, video, stats. So you can go back, you go into the profile of the player, you pull out some of the things that you think are worth looking at. So for a striker, for example, you know, we'll look at goals, we'll look at pressing, we'll look at aerial ability, you know, various categories. And then if they sort of tick the box from those snippets that you see, then you go through and you start having a look at sort of four, five, six of their last games. And that starts to build a picture, you know. So it's probably now a case where I think when I first started, we didn't have all those tools available to us and it was a little bit harder. But now, you know, there's enough, it's not to say you get it right all the time, but there's enough information there now with the video and then social media and then the context that we've built up, someone knows someone, that, yeah, we feel now it's getting easier to make the right decision on a player.
So once you, with that list of say 450, ignoring, you know, how many you actually made an offer to. How many, when you kind of go through all the stats and all the numbers and you whittle it down and you kind of like, okay, these are the people we want to at least kind of reach out to, kind of how big is that list?
Strikers, I reckon we've probably spoken to 40 agents.
Jesus. Wow.
You know, but some rule themselves out straight away, you know. Particularly when you start looking at championship or that level in the UK, you know, these guys are earning £20,000-£25,000 a week. So you have that conversation, you know, hoping that that might just be the right fit, right time. So largely the price will drive people away to start with. So then that whittles out a few, you know, then you start having the conversations more seriously. Then you start looking at the character and all that sort of thing. And I think we've probably... maybe we put a couple of offers that we were sort of like, okay, this is the one. But for various reasons, they haven't worked to date, you know. So it's still, I think, a league where people are looking for something different in their life a little bit. You know, like Matty Steinman, perfect example, 24. Yeah, his career wasn't finished in Germany by any stretch of the imagination, but he had a little bit of, I'm not sure whether Germany's where I want to be anymore, you know, maybe try something different. And I think the league is now getting seen more in Europe as well. So it starts to become a viable option that I can go down there, I can play, and if I do well, then potentially the Asian market or, you know, a bigger contract than the A-League. So you've got to sort of find the person that is looking for that adventure, I guess, a little bit, you know, as well.
So selling the lifestyle as well as the
massive,
experience.
Yeah. Massive. I mean, you take Bali, for example. I think we probably worked with him for about 3 weeks by the time we decided that's the one we wanted. Yeah, you really got to push and sell the lifestyle. But once I get here, Bali's in love. Yeah. He doesn't want to go anywhere. You know, the kids think it's fantastic. He's in a nice place in Seatoon that backs onto the beach almost. You know, the kids are at Seatoon school. It's quite a different lifestyle to what they're probably used to in the UK. So it's a hard sell, but once you get them here, they tend to go, wow. Mm. Yeah.
So obviously the salary cap is kind of the limiting factor in getting new players in. You got any personal opinions on salary cap? Just spitballing without...
It's funny. The salary cap's moved a long way. You know, when I first came in, it was pretty much a hard cap. You know, 3 point whatever it was at the time, that was the cap and that's all you could spend it on. And over the 6 years, you know, you've now got salary cap banking, you've got homegrown, you've got loyalty player. You know, there used to be caps on those, 200,000 Australian for each of those categories. You've got two marquees. Then the guest player came in. And now they've sort of got to the point where homegrown, there's no cap on homegrown. There's no cap on loyalty players. Homegrown's got a full player cap, but there's no financial cap on that. So let's say, for example, you've got four homegrown players on minimum wage even. That's 280,000 Australian. That is outside the cap. Mm. You've got your homegrown. Loyalty players are outside the cap. No restriction on that. So if you've got five players that have been at your club for 5 years, you've got 25% of their salary, bang, outside the cap. The cap's moved up as well, 3.4 New Zealand dollars now. Nine scholarship players. You know, each of those in a New Zealand context is probably worth close to 40,000 New Zealand dollars. So the salary cap is, whilst it's still sort of a salary cap league, I think you're seeing more now it's a really soft salary cap. You know, so I think at some point it'll probably go. But is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? I used to think it was probably a bad thing, but you know, potentially it just means clubs need to make a decision about what they're there to do and what they're trying to achieve. You know, it's no different than anywhere around the world. Not every club's spending what Manchester City's spending. Not every club's spending what Chelsea's spending. Not every club's spending what Bayern Munich's spending. You know, other clubs are spending less, selling players, you know, trying to do things like Leicester did, you know, and I know those are sort of one-off scenarios. So yeah, it's an interesting one. I think there's a lot of debate to come in that space as they go into an independent A-League as well.
Domi's made no bones about saying that, you know, we're a club that is going to grow our players rather than bring in players, obviously the visa aside. So can you give us an idea of where the academy is now and kind of where the club's looking to grow it to? I mean, we've all heard the analogies and comparisons with clubs like Ajax, which, you know, that's a very big comparison to be fair. But can you give us an idea of what, you know, what it would be, say, 5 or 10 years in the future?
Yeah, good question. See, I started with the Football School of Excellence. So I remember a club that basically had one first team, used somebody else to try and play their players and train them. And now we're at a point where we've got four teams running in the winter competitions in conjunction with Lower Hutt. We've got a National League side. We've got a National Youth League side. So we've come a long way in 6 years. That can only keep going, can only grow. There's no secret to the fact that we're not spending what Sydney FC or Melbourne Victory or Melbourne City are spending. So we've got to be smart in how we do that. And the smart way to do that is to try and develop your own talent, which means that you can potentially spend more on your visa players. And you've got to build a team that way. And I think we saw on the weekend, you know, with the likes of Louis and Louis Fenton and Alex Rufo and Callum McGowan, we've got some good talent here. It's great to get Stefan back, you know, and if those visa players that we put around them and the experience of Luke DeFeer and, you know, Josh Satorio, you know, we can be competitive this year. So I think it's a sound model. Where will the academy be in 6 years' time? Hopefully it's got a woman's side to it. I think that's probably the next move. And we just keep producing players. You know, we've 10 are going off to under 17 World Cup in Brazil. So we had six, I think, at the under 20s in Poland, and I'm counting Joe Bell in that. we still think he's one of us, you know. So it's good.
They come back eventually.
It's producing players at that level, and now we've got to give them A-League opportunities so that we can unearth the next Harpreet Singh.
That's a very good comparison. You did touch on, of course, the Women's League. This is presumably a feeder side to a W League side. You're nodding furiously.
Yeah, the women's side of the game has been talked about probably for 2 or 3 years now. Yeah, it's a space that we want to be in. I've got two daughters. I've got a 10-year-old that plays at Onslow. She's done that for the last 3 years. For my sins, I've been coaching that group. And yeah, there's more and more girls playing. Yeah, you know, Wakefield Park on a Sunday morning at 8:30, the pitches are packed, you know. So the women's game's growing. As a club, we're growing, and we want to keep growing in that direction. So with an independent A-League, that puts the women's game or a W-League side sort of on the table for us, and now it's working out how we make that work. And other parties have to come to the table on that. You know, New Zealand football is a big part of that, and they need to step up. We've had conversations with them about trying to get a team into the Women's National League sort of now as a stepping stone. And unfortunately, the sort of flag goes up and it's a little bit too hard. It's not something that the club can do just by itself. I think we need support from the likes of New Zealand football. There are some interested parties in Australia that want to work with us as well on it, because it's potentially something that would have to be based in Australia for from a travel perspective cost. It's the way forward. It has to be the way forward, you know, if we want to be taken seriously as a club like the other clubs are doing. And, you know, you see now the promotional stuff that comes out from the Man City.
Yeah, we know what you mean. Yeah. We know exactly what you mean.
And all the other A-League clubs now, you know, they're not just promoting the men. There is the women are in there. Yeah, it's 2019. It has to happen.
Yeah. Well, like a lot of the league is kind of going down that one club route.
Yeah.
And I think like, came out in The Guardian earlier this week, sort of an analysis of the plan for the independent W League, and sort of saying that essentially all A-League teams will be expected to have a W League team as well, right?
Yeah,
exactly. It's kind of inevitable that it's going to happen, but it's just like when.
When and how. Yeah. When and how, and who wants to jump in. Because, you know, look, if we're going to have a team in that league, you know, it's probably going to be New Zealand players that are in it. That's a benefit to New Zealand football. You know, if you've got women in the New Zealand setup that are playing professionally regularly, either, you know, here and the model is probably looking at a back to back type season with the US coming into the Australian market, New Zealand market. So it's just got to be good for the women's game in New Zealand. So jump on board. But, you know, it's a difficult landscape to operate in. You know, there's, the club's been going for about 12 years now.
Yep.
You know, and, you know, you're still fighting battles all the time, you know, number of pros you can play in the National League. You know, scholarship category is a great example for us. You know, it would be great to have 9 scholarship players. What do you do with them in the winter? Because you're not going to play them in the Central League, because all the clubs are going to put their hands up and say no. So the football in New Zealand needs to sort of move ahead with us as well to understand that we're here. We're in the landscape. There's an independent A-League. We're going to be in the league for a lot longer. Now, how do we incorporate into the local market, and how do people work with us and help us? Yeah.
Do you think those conversations will be easier now that the league is independent and you're not sort of worrying about the FFA and whatnot pushing the Phoenix out? Like, because there's that sense of it's going to be more permanent, then maybe New Zealand football will be more, I suppose, kind of less feeling like they'd be carrying the can if, you know, the Phoenix went under and they had to then do something else.
You'd hope so. And let's see, you know, you've got some new people sitting around the table at New Zealand football now with Pregnant as the CEO and Johanna as the chairperson, and some new blood on the board. So, you know, hopefully it moves in the right direction. Hopefully.
In regards to, say, the academy, obviously you'll be tying, pooling resources, shall we say, regarding the men's and women's teams. How would that work? I mean, I'm kind of curious from an organisation perspective. Is it like there'll be a men's academy and a women's academy, or there'll be an academy and that, you know, resources will be shared all the way up? Or has that even been discussed at all?
No, you're starting to get into the detail now.
Yeah, sorry, mate. My own sports going. Yeah.
Look, if you're going to do something, you've got to do it properly, and you've got to try and resource it properly. And the owners have spent millions and millions of dollars on this club, you know, to get it to where it is. So it is going to require investment, not just from the owners, from other people. And if we're going to do it right, you know, you want to see a women's academy with teams in the W League, teams in the National League in New Zealand, teams playing in the local leagues. Pretty similar to where we've landed now with the boys and men side of it. So, yeah, you have to do it that way. there has to be a pathway. And a pathway also for players to drop down and play games if they're not playing in the top teams.
So you've decided the name is Sheenux?
I'll leave that to you guys.
Yeah, well, I've been pushing that for a while.
No. Was it the She-We-Nix that I had an issue with?
No. Unless we get the tie-in for the sponsorship.
Leave that to the marketing gurus. They'll come up with that.
Yeah. So pivoting to a bit of a change of subject. Uffy's someone that we don't really know much about.
Yeah.
And he's kind of come in and been his actually remarkably forthcoming, I thought, for a first-team coach.
Yeah.
What does he bring that's different to what other coaches have brought in before him? Because obviously he's come from a very different setup in that he's been an assistant at a very, very large club.
Yeah, yeah. Uffy's a smart coach. Tactically, very, very smart, very astute. He's very organised, very detail-driven. But he's not just an assistant coach from Sydney FC. He had a stellar playing career. Arguably one player I think I've spoken about a lot, you know, that should have maybe played for the Socceroos. He's got a very, very good grounding and background in the game. And then, you know, he went off and probably did things a little bit sort of different than other coaches, and maybe what you call the harder way. You know, he went into the AIS, he worked with youth, he then went into the Australian setup, you know, worked with under 20s, under 23s, and then he got his role at Sydney FC. And now he's with us. For me, he's been fantastic to work with. You know, he's, as I say, he's detail orientated. He's driven. He wants to be successful. And I think one of the things that really sort of drew the football committee to appointing him was the fact that he'd also worked in that youth space, and he got the youth space, and he wasn't afraid to play youth. We made a conscious decision, I guess, as a club that, you know, we've got this New Zealand talent here. We need to use them and we need to play them, as well as trying to get results, which is obviously what it's all about. And he fitted the bill. You know, he can work with the youth. He gets on well with the youth. He knows how to develop the youth. But at the same time, you know, he works well with the senior players, tactically very good, as I say. I think there's going to be good things coming from Uffy. And he was well respected in the Australian market as well. He's a coach that actually came on the radar probably 2 or 3 years ago as one that was going to be the next up and comer. So it just needs some time to gel this team together. It's a new group. There's some young players. There's also some foreign players that have never played in the league before, you know. So it doesn't happen overnight for those guys. You know, it's going to take a little bit of time, but I'm sure he'll get them ticking in the right direction, starting this weekend in Sydney.
So with this very young player roster and a coach who's very much interested in youth development and has that background, is this a conscious shift within the club management to say we're going to look a little bit longer term? And is that related to the independent A-League and kind of feeling a little bit like the shackles are lifted such that short-term results aren't the biggest thing?
I think that's fair to say. You know, I think it's the evolution of a football club as well. You know, the club is young, you know, in terms of the rest of the world, with the academy coming on board and some of the transfers and deals and solidarity training compensation that have come through, you start to realise that there's a big football commercial world out there that you have to be part of, you know. So if you can bring through players, New Zealand players that we have from a young age that come through that roster and put some good players around them, you can still be successful, you know, and there's no bones about it. We want to be top six, you know, and if things go well, top four, and who knows from there. But at the same time, also developing the next Sapri Singh, the next Libby Kakache, and trying to, you know, make some money off that and then keep funding the club, and that's what pays for the women's side of the game. That's what pays for the academy. You know, that's what it's all about.
So I think we'll just finish on Sean Gill draws a long bow. By the end of the season, you got any big calls that you reckon will happen? Just so you can say I've called them now.
I haven't really thought that far ahead, to be honest. It's sort of one day at a time at the moment.
But the window's only just closing, mate. So, you know, looking at Gilly's job, I think he's probably getting sleepless nights. So you don't really look too much.
Window's closed, mate. Yesterday.
tell you what, maybe not something that I've looked ahead to, but one thing I'm looking forward to, hopefully, is a coach going into the second year of his contract with a squad of 14 or 15 at pre-season, because it's been a hard few years changing coaches, you know, new rosters. So it would be nice to get to the end of the season, have been in the playoffs. Uffie and I have got 14, 15, 16 players ready to go for the start of pre-season, and we're just putting the finishing touches to a squad for 2021.
I'll be honest, mate, that is a bit of a long bow for the
team. actually, looking at the squad that you've got there currently, how many are contracted beyond this season? I haven't actually looked at that stat.
Stefan Radovic, Oliver Sale, Louis Fenton.
Reno Piscopo.
Libby Kikache.
Callum's
on 1 year. Rufus on 1 year. Steinman's on 1 year.
Ball.
Bally's got another one.
Yeah.
Ulysses has another one.
Yeah. That's as many as we've already had.
Six, seven, eight now.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, we're already starting to think about what does next year look like. You know, some conversations will be had with some players, and we'll start that process now. So plans are already underway. You know, this year's not finished by any stretch of the imagination, but you already got to start thinking towards next year.
Is that kind of your next thing is, obviously, once everyone's on the field, you're kind of like, who do we need to lock down before January?
Yeah. So that's something we're already now, you know, we work 2 to 3 years ahead with the budgets, you know, what they look like. Obviously, we hope that they keep pushing up. But we've got a 3-year plan of who's there. The window closes last night. So salary cap player payments reporting register has to be in next Tuesday, and then from that you get a list of off-contract players in the A-League, and come 1 December you can start talking to those players. So, you know, first and foremost, talk to the players that we want to talk to now. If we don't get the responses that we want from those players, then you start looking at the off-contract list. Start looking at what else is going on around the world. You know, what's Joe Bell going to do? Has he finished his study? Does he want to look at us as an option? You know, those are the type of things that you start looking at. So it's funny. There's no real off time. It's always, you're always thinking about where the next player is coming from. And then, you know, largely once that's all in place, then that's where you start plotting where your visa players coming around. So so the visa players tend to be not last minute, but they're the ones that you sort of go, right, we've got that, we've got this, we've got that. Now we need this, and now we need that. Yeah.
So I guess that's pretty much all of our questions. Thanks for coming in, Sean.
No problem.
Anything else you'd like to add before you go?
No, I think that's all pretty good. I thought I was going to get some questions about Sarpreet Singh and all the rest of it, but no.
Righty-ho then, Gilly. Sarpreet Singh, tell us how that works out.
So, look, Sarpreet had made no bones about the fact that he wanted to get to Europe, and as a club, yeah, we have to be supportive of that. That's part and parcel of what these players want to do. Yeah, obviously, you want to keep these players as long as you can. So, yeah, he got himself involved with a pretty good agent.
Let's call him a very good agent.
A very good agent. And Bayern Munich came knocking. And, yeah, with a club like Bayern Munich, you're not really in a strong negotiating point. You know, that it is Bayern Munich, and they sort of say what's going to happen, and that's what happens. But to be fair to Bayern, they were pretty fair. Yeah. So, yeah, you can't talk about numbers in these type of deals, but the upfront fee was good. You know, it was enough to keep the board interested, and then
a 3-year offer as well.
A 3-year offer, which is great for the kid, and then you've got some bonus stuff on top of that. Should Sarpreet hit some certain targets, both with the under 23 side and with the first team, and then there's also a stake in any potential moves after that. You know, so when you if you look at what the upfront fee is, you know, people may go, but then if you look at all the stuff that goes along the way and where that might get to, then potentially it's a very, very good deal for the club. So,
well, worst case scenario.
But at the same time, you can't, what do you do? When the kid wants to go to Europe, Bayern Munich come knocking.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, and there's also the stuff you can't quantify. You know, from a football club perspective, doing a deal with Bayern Munich, you know, from an academy side of things, having one of your guys that's gone through the academy for 3 years, then gone into the first team, and then gone on to Bayern Munich, it's a great story. Yeah. You know, and it's a good story for the young kids in New Zealand as well. That bit of hard work, and that's what can happen.
Well, I mean, the tie-in contracts is something that I'm kind of I'm quite pleased about, just because of worst case scenario, he spends 3 years at Bayern and doesn't crack the first team. He's still guaranteed a fairly decent move within Europe anyway. So either way, it's from a financial perspective, it's almost a no-loss situation for the Knicks.
Correct. And that's part and parcel of it. You know, these deals aren't straightforward. Here's $1 million. Thanks a lot. See you later. You know, you have to weigh up what that initial offer is, what any potential future stake in that player is. And that's when potentially the money's made. You know, if he moves on to a bigger club, great. Great for him, great for us, great for Bayern Munich. You know, and there's other deals like that as well. You know, there's FIFA state their regulations quite clearly. Training compensation is this and you must pay that. But in the time I've been at the club, both from players going to the other part of the world or from players coming to this part of the world, you never pay straight out training compensation. And I guess Tyler Boyd's probably a good example of that. When he moved to Portugal out of contract, training compensation, letter of the law, what FIFA says, I think we were due €90,000 from that. We took a smaller chunk of that to have a percentage of any future moves that he would do. He moves from the Portuguese club, can't remember.
Guimarães.
To Besiktas for €2.4 million. So actually, at the end of the day, we made more out of that deal by not taking the straight-out training compensation, working with the club, and you end up making more money down the line. It doesn't always work out like that, but, yeah, this is the world we live in.
Careful, Gilly. It's going to sound like you pushed him out the door to get the money.
Well, if there was a case, they'd have got a transfer fee, wouldn't they? So perhaps not the pushing.
Yeah.
No, there was no pushing. There was no pushing at all. But it's a, you know, it's not a straightforward world. The solidarity training compensation. You've got to look at all scenarios. I think we've probably got 6 or 7 other players currently around the world that we've had to negotiate away. We've been asked to negotiate away the trading compensation for percentages, and if those players do well, we do well, and that's just the football landscape, because largely we probably do the same the other way.
Because training, let's be honest, the training compensation is, say, $90,000. That's, in the scheme of things, that's not a lot of cash, but if you're getting transfer fees in the millions and millions of dollars, it doesn't take a very large percentage to more than make that money back.
No.
And you don't have to have that many do that. If you have your Tyler Boyd, you might have 2 or 3 do that, and you really are going to be making a decent little cash there for the academy.
And I think there's probably a little bit of a misconception out there too around how much money there is outside some of the big leagues and some of the big clubs. You know, these clubs don't have a lot of money, you know. So if they make money on a player, then they're happy to share in that, you know. But I guess sometimes they feel like they're taking a gamble on a New Zealand player and they're asking us to be part of that investment to a certain extent.
A little more pragmatic about the whole thing.
Yeah. But, so that's a fun part of it anyway, fun part of the job, you know. Getting to deal with all these clubs all over the world.
You must get very little sleep.
Yes, and very cold in the wintertime when my wife says, get outside on the deck because you're too noisy inside. So 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, unfortunately, you're working in an A-League, so we're 2 hours behind them. So they start sending emails and phone calls at sort of 6 o'clock our time, and then Europe wakes up when you're in the market for a visa player, or Europe, anywhere in Europe or Asia even. So it is tough, but you are.
The windows are short.
Times. Windows are short. Times to hang out with your family.
Fair. All good. Cheers, man. We appreciate you coming in.
No worries. Very good.
Thanks, Gilly. Right. So on to the A-League now. As our standard, we shall talk about the next game first. Well, that's the end of the Knicks talk. Let's move on.
Nah, come on. There were some positives to take out of that game. There were some. It wasn't all doom and gloom.
Shall we just say Callum McCowart? That's one of the best debuts I've seen in quite some time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Certainly in a black and yellow jersey.
Yeah. I think I'll sound a bit like a broken record if we keep going on about the kid, but he's excellent, absolutely excellent. He was the standout Phoenix player in that game. Everything he did showed his tenacity. It showed his desire to be the man on that field, and it was great to see.
Yeah, not afraid to take players on, which I thought was good.
And beat them.
Yeah. The show of pace and then the taking the pace off and double-stepping them, that was really nice because he was keeping things nice and simple, but just showing and going. Mm. It was, I got to say, I really like that. Unfortunately,
I would have him starting alongside Ball up the top because I didn't think Soterio delivered anything at all.
I'm glad you said that because I thought he was garbage.
I wouldn't go so far as to say garbage because first game, still trying to gel with players. But he didn't, we know he doesn't have a finish, right? We've discussed that previously on the pod. Dave has been pretty critical of Soterio's finishing ability, but as a wide player with his pace and cross, you'd think he'd be able to create something, but he's not playing wide. He's playing up the middle. He's playing up the middle without a finish, and that was very, very evident.
For me, he's got one move, regardless on which foot he's on, and that's to go the outside, and he's got nothing else, and he's got no shot from the outside. Yeah, he's – I think he's a borderline bench player, and he's a wide player. That's it. If he's not playing wide 10 in that 4-2-2-2, I don't see him even being in the squad, to be quite honest. I'd rather have Ben Wayne in there. I'd rather have McCowart.
Yeah, that's pretty clear. I think you make a good point with Ben Wayne. He offered quite a bit when he came on. Again, showed the desire to do well. His tracking back was phenomenal. He's got some pace, doesn't he?
Yeah.
My God.
My jaw just dropped that bit to just after the 80th minute, I think, when he was just boosting it back.
Yeah.
Yeah, phenomenal.
Well, it's just, that was brilliant. That was fantastic. I mean, it just shows that.
He did that at the end of last year when he had that really breakout game. I remember him tracking all the way back.
Yep. And making just, a tackle, slide tackle, and taking the ball. It was brilliant. Yeah. That's the kind of passion you want in a player. I mean, fair enough. He's fresh running against tired legs in the 80th minute.
Yeah, and he's obviously needing to make an impression because he's going to want that starting jersey. He's seeing McCowart there and he's going, well, I want that too.
Yeah.
You know, needing to make that good impression. But, you know, they're saying it and then they're doing it, and he really did it.
Yeah, and that was awesome.
Should we give a bit of credit where it's due as well? As far as players playing well, there were a few players in black and green who were freaking phenomenal. Diamante.
Oh,
The quality of his passing, even when he was passing direct, the pace that was just perfect, just dropping it on a plate. Scott McDonald, I thought, was outstanding. 36 years old and playing wide, that is not an easy ask. And he was going the full 90, and I think it was the 80-something minute that he pulled that big swerving right footer that made Marinovic pull that stunning save out.
Yeah.
That's not bad. But the Snakes midfield, Kone, Diamante, and the Croatian.
I don't remember the name.
Jurtek.
Okay.
The youngest, Jurtek's the youngest at 32, then 36, 37. Mm. And they played I think Jurtek came off of the irony there. And otherwise played a full 90 first game of the season and were phenomenal.
Yeah, I think they were phenomenal in the first half. They ran that game in the first half. There was no argument there. Western United were good for the lead that they had, although the goal they had was our own mistake. But they had, it's as simple, you keep the ball from the opposition, they can't score goals. And that's basically what Western United did in the first half. And it was their retaining of possession and their recycling position was excellent. Their transition play was very, very good. They weren't overly fast with it, but when they did break, they could break well. Tended to be down those wings and behind the pushed up fullbacks when they did break, but they had so much ball they didn't really get the opportunity too often in the first half.
I thought that even the second half, you think about where we got our openings, none of it was in the centre of the field. You'd think that with legs that old, tracking back is going to be a real issue, and there should be gaps in between the back four and the back line and their midfield. No, there wasn't. The only gaps we found were way out wide where we had to ping in across. I mean, that's, you got to give them credit for that. But as far as our defensive formation, did you guys notice that a lot of the time when we tracked all the way back, we would have our full complement of four players all inside the 6-yard box? I saw them do it multiple times. The ball would be out wide and it would be Davila having to track back, but Fenton's actually inside the six. I thought that was quite weird. And the goal was very much that. There was four guys on the 6-yard line. It had been crossed in, tapped, and then gone back, and we still had a full bank of.
Well, there was actually seven Phoenix players. When you look around where Berisha was when he finished that, there were seven Phoenix shirts standing around him, which he's in the middle of, to get that space to score. So that's why I say it was our fault that he scored, because you can't leave Besart Berisha, the league's leading goal scorer of all time, free in your 6-yard box. Not when there's seven of you there. Someone has to be on him.
But you have a look, watch the replay again, and you'll see four guys in front of him, literally in a perfect formation, just as you say, forgotten to do the whole man marking thing.
It actually says if he's got us very well drilled. Now, I can't tell where I watch from. Obviously, it's very hard for me to get perspective in the defensive third about where the players are in depth. Often I'll think they're attacking our box and they're still sitting just on the other side of halfway. So I can't, when I look up the big screen, I'm going, my depth is completely screwed. So I don't really know. But it just suggests that we're playing defensively exactly how he wants us to.
Yeah, I don't think there's too much of a problem with the defence. It's just the speed of transition, the speed of our passing isn't great. We've been quite cautious, Rufa and Steinman. So we're tending to play back and then going out wide. Mm-hmm. And I think we're going to have to look at a little more adventurous passing if we want to break teams down, and especially if we want to get, because we've got smaller, fast guys in there, we don't have a target option. We're going to have to get that forward passing and a little more risky passing in behind. Otherwise, just going out wide and pinging it in, we're going to really struggle. I mean, Ball and Sotirio, or even Ball and McCowett, you know, in the air, that's not going to work, I don't think.
We had two decent headed opportunities during the game. The first one was Rufa, who it was drilled. It literally needed to be at his nose for him to have any chance of actually getting in, because he wasn't steering it. He's done well to get it in the right direction of the goal. It has to be lower for it to go in.
Yeah, I honestly think that if he'd had a split second more, he wouldn't have tried to header it so much as hit it with his face and just face it down into the ground, as soon as it hit his forehead, it wasn't going in the goal.
No, and then there was Ben Wayne late in the second half as well.
He got
up and just, but he was under pressure from two defenders. He's done very well to get it even close. Yeah. So it was a good effort. I think our two best opportunities of the entire game were David Ball's chip. And he's done so well to get in that position. He's done everything right except
and a beautiful pass to get him in there.
Yeah, Stephen Taylor just pinged it.
That was brilliant. And the control to bring it. Oh, honestly,
as soon as he brought it down,
piece of football.
I thought he was going to score it. And unfortunately, from the TV angle, it looked like he had. And I was dancing around the living room quite happily. And it broke my heart.
Yeah.
Because that was such a nice touch.
It was incredible, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Absolutely incredible. This is why I rate him as our 10, because of touches like that and vision like that. That was superb. For a start, to see the run to make and then to control the ball like he has to get into that position, that's just brilliant football. He just needs to get that finish on target. And obviously Libby in the second half, who got our only shot on target.
What a hit.
That was phenomenal, but it was our only shot on target in the entire game. And when your only shot on target is coming from 30 yards out from your left back, that's a concern. And let's be honest, Curto loves an unnecessary dive, and we loved him for it last year. He's dived for that. I think he's actually made it look better than it was. Still a great hit and on target, needed saving, but I don't
think it's 30 yards out. Exactly. He had time.
So yeah, I think that all encompassing there summarizes our issue.
Yep.
9.
Yep.
That one word, that one number is our massive issue off that first game, because I felt with a 9, a guy who can put it in, we possibly get one. Could have got 2, because we had enough possession in that second half. In the final third, we just weren't dangerous enough with it, because there was no actual goal threat sitting in there.
So, obviously, we've got a couple of things going forward. If a 9 falls out of the sky tomorrow, this would be best case scenario. Yes, it would. You're furiously nodding like I'm just
waiting for you to finish your point. Yeah.
So, that would be best case scenario. But do we see any other changes? I mean, I was very surprised that Sotirio started.
Sotirio out for this mythical 9 that you talk about. Mystical 9 that you talk about.
Mystically mythical.
Yeah, and no, I don't. I think Louis was pretty gassed by into the second half, so that's why Payne came on. Again, Louis is coming back from injury, first time he's played in a long, long time.
But interesting that Payne goes on rather than Scott.
Yeah, so unless you're saving Walter Scott for the other wing, I don't know. Hmm. You notice that the benches are much bigger this year.
Yeah,
there's the seven match.
Yeah, oh, which cool. is excellent. Hmm. Excellent. Actually gives you an opportunity to use your subs in a creative way to change the game. I really like that. Payne did a good job. He did a decent job. He's got much better legs than I anticipated. Deceptively quick, and he covered the yards very, very well. Obviously, again, he's trying to impress. He wants to stay a pro. He wants to, you know, be involved and be an option do a good job, and he did. So, so I don't see anyone else coming in. I thought Marinovic played well, made the saves he needed to make. There was a fair few that he needed to make, but
none
he was
of them only particularly hard, with the exception of the McDonald. Scott,
yeah, that one, it was an excellent save.
That was
save.
A fantastic save. That made A-League save of the season, a save of the round.
Yeah, nice. It was a very good effort. I'd say that counts as the Curto one now, you know what I mean? So when it comes to chances, because it wasn't a game of a lot of opportunities.
No.
Just, you know, Berisha did what a good number nine does.
So mythical number nine, obviously best case scenario. Should mythical number nine not fall out and literally fall into the first team? Do we see Soterio maintaining his position?
Oh, I would be dropping him to the bench. McCowett's done more than enough to stay involved. He was phenomenal.
Piscopo? Ella?
Yeah, I mean, he looked right when he came on. Like,
Or do you just roll the dice and go Ben Wayne?
I don't want to put that much pressure on a kid too young. You don't want to ruin, like we talk, you know, we've been talking a lot about, you know, the long-term game at the moment. You don't want to ruin a kid for the point of a season or for a few games if we don't need to, and I don't think we do. I think we still need to bed him in. He's, you know, got phenomenal potential. He looks great when he does come on, but don't do it too early.
Playing devil's advocate here, mm-hmm. He's had a couple of really good substitutions, and when he played against Perth last season, when he started, also very good.
Yeah, he was really, really good then.
At what point then, if it's not now, when does Ben Wayne, playing as he is, get the opportunity?
Oh,
I sound like Ben Wayne's
dad. That's a great question. He gets that opportunity if probably about three games from now, if we're still struggling to score.
Yeah.
If we don't have this mythical nine that you talk about.
Yeah, if he's still banging on the door every time he comes on, if he's still like showing, you know, that, you know, the pace, the desire, the tenacity, the physicality, if he's still showing that, you know, every week that he's being pulled on for, you know, 15, 10 minutes at the end, then, you know, you've got another option but to say, okay, you know, you warrant a starting place for a bit, see how you go there.
Okay, like Cam's put a number on it. Ella, go and put a number on it.
I mean, I would have gone like three or four games as well.
You're allowed to agree with me. Yeah. It's okay.
It means you're wrong, but you're allowed to agree with him.
Because you want him to go now, right? You'd play him next week against Sydney?
No, I actually wouldn't. I would go McCoward up top and Piscopo.
See, Piscopo's a 10. He's not up top.
Yeah, no, I think Piscopo into 10 where McCoward was, McCoward up to 9.
Interesting.
I mean, in saying all that, like, how do we feel about the 4-2-2? What are our thoughts on that?
I'm not a fan.
We
don't have two centre forwards.
Yeah.
That's the first thing. We've got 3-4 maybe tens. It's only once we get to the back seven that we're kind of like, yeah, okay, that works.
Decent team.
Yeah, so you look at if we get the 9, I'm going to say we're not because there is no 9, right? But we could still, because the window's closed. So no 9. 4-2-3-1. Yeah, okay. 4-2-3-1.
Yes.
Doing the Via Ball and Piscopo and McCoward up front. That's what you would look at. Or would you do McCoward back there and Ball up front? Because I think McCoward has the better potential to score than Ball. Ball is incredibly creative. Mm. So perhaps for the personnel we have, defensively, 4-4-2 is what we're doing. That's fine because you know, two players to drop in, you get a 4-4-2 defensively. 4-2-2 going forward with the guys pulling wide as necessary. But of all of those guys, McCowart's the one who could be up front with the most ability to score most. He's the guy that can pull the rabbit out of the hat when he has to. Cliche, bingo, I know. He's got just that individual bit of brilliance that may unlock a defence which you can't unlock. Putting him as the spearhead might be the right option. He's certainly going to draw the two centre backs in when he does that, which is going to make room for your three creative tens to go and do what they're going to do.
Yeah. If 4-2-3-1 feels better, especially when you've already got three, maybe four tens there anyway, but late now, we're just going to hope that something falls out of the sky. So obviously goals going forward, 9 or some rejig in there is our way forward. Should we roll on to the rest of the round? Seeing as we probably have to talk about that. First game, remind me, was
Adelaide at home to Sydney. Sydney won away 3-2 to an 87th minute winner from Ryan McGowan. Other goals were scored by Nikola Milenkovic. I can't pronounce that. Forgive me.
Milenkovic.
Yeah, Milenkovic and Toure scored the two for Adelaide, which was cancelling out the opening two from Adam Lafondre. Costa had a goal disallowed by VAR. I don't know anything around that. If you guys seen
offside.
It?
Offside. I only
was it offside?
Yeah, the VAR decisions, from what I remember, were actually correct. Mm. But everyone's was bitching, moaning.
Yeah, I was going to say, didn't Twitter kind of explode as it tends to do?
Yeah,
on that particular
it's
one.
VAR, it's like, you know.
Yeah. Mm.
All right, so the second game on Saturday, or first Saturday game, second game of the round, was Western Sydney 2, Central Coast Mariners 1. Much, much closer than I thought it was going to be. Mariners took the lead, cancelled out by Mitchell Duke, and won by a Mitchell Duke penalty in the 82nd minute for a VAR-given handball against Dylan Fox, which was brutally harsh in my opinion.
Technically correct.
But okay, if you are going to go through the entire season giving these as handballs, okay, that's fine. I'll accept it. But if you, that's basically taking away all intent at all. It's hit his arm. His arm was away from the body. He was a meter away, and it's drilled at him.
This was precisely how the handball rule was applied at the Women's World Cup, and it was a nightmare.
Yeah.
It was awful. It's probably the way things are all going to go.
Which is ridiculous, in my opinion. How do you legislate for the poor guy who's standing there?
It forces players into a natural position, which is entirely unnatural for when you're trying to play football, how you need to contort your body. You know, it's basically the hands behind your back thing, which, you know, you can't jump, you can't move. There's no...
You can't even keep your balance.
Yeah. It's insane.
If you jump, your arms go out to keep your balance when you jump. It's as simple
it's
as
literally
it.
Physics.
Exactly.
It's, like it's not hard.
Exactly. The point is natural body position. And it drives me mental that this would be given as a handball. I really felt for Dylan. I really did, that because that was rubbish.
Yeah.
Was anybody appealing for the penalty? Like, that's the thing. Like, because in some of those decisions, like, players don't even appeal for it because it's like, well, this is stupid. Mm. And then VAR's like, well, hit your hand in the penalty area.
No, I don't remember, to be honest.
Friend of the pod, Dr. Quack, explained all this. He's just gone through the referee training, and he said that the guidance is you must stay within your cylinder, being your torso. And if you're basically your hands are in there, you're fine. But as you say, jumping, stepping, running.
If your body's turning, your arm goes out that way. Yeah. It's ridiculous. Yeah. Anyway, moving on.
Ballet training will be needed to turn with your arms down.
Yeah.
You should see my demonstration. It's very balletic.
Beautiful, yes. My daughter would be impressed.
Yeah. The tutu's a good touch.
So then Saturday night was the Melbourne Derby.
Before we go on to that, we may as well mention what you brought up with the new signing for Wanderers.
Yeah. I don't actually have the details in front of me if you want to bring that up.
Nikolai Muller, a rather storied background, playing in the Bundesliga.
180 appearances in the Bundesliga for 74 goal interactions. So goals and assists. That's impressive. That's a good signing for the A-League.
Yeah. Played for Germany twice. Has played with Permen Schweigler, one of the other ones. But 100 goals and 418 total appearances. 300 German first and second tier games. This is not a bad player.
No, this is a good signing. This is the Majewski replacement for the – obviously he's gone for the year, so
I'm going to say that's an upgrade.
No, I wouldn't go quite that far.
Majewski's good. To be fair, I don't know Muller's age, but certainly that amount of games at that level, wow. Mm. So, that's going to – add once he gets, you know, Aussie turf under his feet, he will add to their squad.
Yeah, he will. So Melbourne Victory drew nil all with Melbourne City. Elvis Cam Sober had a goal disallowed by VAR. I'm not sure what this one was for. Probably offside again.
Very good goal celebration. Gymnastics tumble. Someone on Twitter suggested that because it's disallowed, he should have to do the whole thing in reverse to take it back.
Not opposed.
No. Yeah, I'm all in favour of that.
Actually, you know what? I don't know where this was this weekend, but someone, when they scored a goal, their celebration was to do the VAR symbol.
And then and that goal got pulled back.
Yeah.
Disallowed for VAR. I can't remember which one it was, but yeah.
All right. And the last game of the round after ours was Perth Glory drawing 1-1 with Brisbane Roar.
Did anyone pick that?
No one.
No, we were picking a bloodbath.
Yeah, I picked 4-0. Yeah. Goals were Economidis for Perth. They opened the scoring, and it was a 95th minute leveller from Roy O'Donovan to make it 1-1. So that's a great point for Brisbane away at Perth. That's a solid.
Oh, shit, yes. Yeah. That is fantastic for them. Just generally, Melbourne Derby, stunk.
Yeah.
It's normally pretty dour, but this absolutely stunk. It was so cautious. Like, I think the first half there was one shot on goal.
Really?
It was just something retarded like that. It was just horrible. I mean, obviously, it was, you know, if this was boxing, it was very much a, you know, jab and fake. It was just, oof.
Yeah, see, Kurtz is a defensive manager, and he's going to, like, Victory's not going to ship many goals this year. No. But I'm genuinely surprised they didn't win it.
You think about the firepower they've got. To not fire a shot.
Yeah, that's
I think they had five shots on goal the whole game.
Yeah,
off the top of my head, City had something like 12, and with Noon up top, that's not a good return.
I thought they had no one up top. Right, so moving on to this week. Obviously, we play Sydney FC away.
Oof.
So Oofy. Homecoming for Oofy. How do we feel that's going to go?
Poorly.
I can't see us. Our game is at 8 o'clock New Zealand time on Sunday. For those that wish to watch it, it'll be on Sky Sports 7, the football channel. Yeah, I can't see us winning this. Genuinely think it'll be a 2-0.
I think 3.
I think we defensively were quite sound. It's Sydney and Adam Lafondra will score. It's as simple as that.
Death taxes.
Yeah.
Lafondra scoring 2-1.
You think we're going to get one?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah. So, yeah.
And I think Ben Wayne needs to prove he needs that starting spot. So
I like Little Miss Positive Riley.
First time I've ever been called that.
Yeah. Absolutely wrong, but.
No, that's
you never know.
Barring a mythical number 9.
Let's be honest. Oofy knows better than anybody else how Sydney's going to play.
Yeah.
We're going to play the same way. We're going to set up to counter exactly what they do. So I can't see them scoring a lot against us.
No.
For that reason.
I think it's going to go one of two ways. It'll be a nil or draw, or it'll be 3-0 to Sydney. It's just going to be one of these things where everyone knows how everyone's going to play, and it's just like, oh, here we go.
Yeah.
That could easily be the way.
Yeah. It's our start of the season is horrible. Because after that we have Perth, and then after that we have Victory. And then I think after that we have City. So it's literally
we get all the top four out of the way.
We play Victory and Sydney twice before Christmas, and we haven't played. Don't think we play Newcastle or Mariners and Brisbane into the second half of the season.
That is brutal.
Yeah, it's really, really, really hard.
Yeah, if you're going to set up a season to basically absolutely destroy us by the first half, this was the one.
Done well.
Yeah,
yeah. Thank you, A-League.
So the rest of the round, Friday is Melbourne Victory at home to the Wanderers.
They could be tasty.
Yeah. When are the new signing starts? I think this will be a 1-1 draw.
There's
not going to be a lot of goals.
Yeah, I don't know. I think a draw, but I think probably something like 2-2. I think that they'll come out a little more. I suspect that this new fella, Muller, will come off the bench.
Yeah, he's unlikely to start early doors because he hasn't obviously trained very much with the team. Still learning system. But if he's a forward player, if he's a frontline player, then number 9 job is fairly similar in most places when you're playing straight.
And also, if he will have been training for the German season, so he will already be.
He'll have match fitness. Yeah, it's just system and tactics he needs to learn for them, basically.
And hopefully his English is,
he's like three or four Germans in there, isn't there? So he'll be fine. So the next game is Western United's first home game ever, and they're against Perth Glory.
I like the way you did air quotes when you said home.
I didn't, but yep, fair enough. They've got
I'll do them for you.
There's so they're playing in Geelong bar 3 games which are in Ballarat. So yeah.
Well, I'm sure that they'll get a massive walk up crowd from all the AFL players who are curious.
Well, the other thing about the Geelong ground, it's enormous. It is enormous. It's like playing on the football on the MCG.
Yeah.
So they're going to have to put the ground in one side. I think they did this when the Victory took a game to Launceston or Hobart in Tasmania, and they played it to an AFL/cricket oval and literally put the ground on one part close to some stadiums and then closed off half the ground because it's just too big. You just don't – it's going to be weird. It's going to be hard to generate an atmosphere that it obviously aren't going to get too big a numbers.
You think about Westpac, or sorry, not Westpac, Sky Stadium now.
January will be Sky Stadium, Westpac now.
Oh, it's still?
Still Westpac, yeah.
The Ring of Fire, shall we say.
No, there's no one outside outside Wellington. It's only used by people outside Wellington, not people in Wellington.
That's a 35,000-seater in a small oval.
Yep.
And you get, we'll say, 7,000-8,000, and it looks pretty empty. You imagine, say, 4 or 5 in an AFL stadium that is at least double that size.
Yeah.
For ground size.
Yeah. It's not
going to be area, by the way.
Yeah. All right. So I picked Perth winning this one 3-1.
I think it's probably going to be a 2-1 to Perth.
I'm sort of leaning 4-1.
Oh, to Perth, nice.
To Perth, yeah.
You must really think that we stunk.
No, I think it's more Perth have got a point to prove after week just gone.
Bold.
And, you know, old tired legs at Western United. So
yeah, it was their first game ever. Yeah. Their average age was like 32 or something stupid, so it's quite high.
Yeah. And obviously they're going up to Perth. Obviously Western. Forget that.
Yeah. Either way, Perth's kind of still going to win. 3-1.
Yeah.
Yeah. Then we've got the F3 Derby. So Mariners against the Jets. I'm actually going to pick the Mariners, who are at home, to win this.
Me too.
1-0.
I think it's going to be a few more goals than that, just because they're pretty loose teams. Maybe 2-1, 2-0 to Mariners.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
Yeah, rolling with a 3-2 to the Jets.
Ooh.
To the Jets.
Yeah, okay, fair. It's the Jets' first game of the season. They didn't play last week, and they're away this week, so their first home game isn't until round 3.
Yeah, so they're also hard defense. Yeah, there are also not many of them.
No. All right, next game is Melbourne City versus Adelaide, or at home to Adelaide on Sunday at 6 o'clock. I pick City to win this one 2-1.
I think the other way. I think Adelaide 2-1.
I think City 2-0.
This is in Adelaide, right?
No, it's in Melbourne. No.
Oh, I take that back then. in which case I say 1-1.
Okay, so that's the round. Sitting out this week is Brisbane. Brisbane have the bye this week.
No comment about the coach.
They have the bye this week. There's nothing to comment about.
It hasn't stopped you in the past. So I guess that's all there. We can all pray for a number 9 to drop in from the field. So let's go to these shores with the National Women's League.
Yeah.
We're at home on the weekend.
Yes, we were at home to Central, so kind of lower North Island derby, if you will.
You've got to talk the derbies up better than that. Come on. Come on, if we know anything about marketing, derbies.
Derbies, yeah.
Himatangi Street derby.
Foxton Street.
Foxton Street.
Foxton Street derby.
Oh, nice. Foxton Fizz derby.
Good.
Yep. Foxton Fizzer.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, it kind of fizzled out, to be fair.
Nice. This is why you're in the match.
it was a game that Cap should have dominated more than they did. You know, obviously rolled out with a 3-2 win in the end, but Central kind of pulled their way back into it. So kind of first 20 minutes, Emma Austin scores from a lovely Charlotte Wilfred Carroll setup. We get our second, we're looking good. And then Michaela Boxall, captain for Central, who is also a futsal fern. She plays keeper for the futsal ferns, but is a number 9 for Central and is also an assistant coach this season. So
she is a quality footballer.
She is excellent. Yeah. She is excellent. And she really saw the opportunity to pull Central back into the end, because Cap, despite all the possession they had, weren't quite, you know, just putting it away. And it's particularly not against a team like Central, where you just the quality of Cap versus Central is kind of a bit of a no-brainer. And they just weren't decisive enough in that final third. Michaela Boxall, a couple of goals, one being a penalty for something I was dubious about the call of the penalty, to be fair. And then, like, it genuinely looked like it could have gone either way for a bit. Then eventually we get the penalty in the 88th minute, I think, which Katie Barrett dispatched very clinically.
Nice.
Yeah, so we... good to get the first win, but still looked a little bit rusty. Still didn't quite look as convincing as, you know, I think we should have in that game.
So how's the table sitting now then?
So it's kind of shaping up very similar to last year. The Pride are top. They beat Auckland 1-0 over the weekend at Kiwitea Street. It got moved there from Lachlan Park, which apparently was unplayable for some reason. But, you know, for a fixture like that, like,
you know, Kiwitea is all right.
Yeah, it's not bad. It's not bad.
It's a beautiful boutique stadium,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, so it's kind of, you know, a venue fitting of the occasion of, you know, the Pride versus Auckland. Brittany Lee Nicholson got that goal, I think, so she's top goal scorer for the National Women's League at the moment, scored every game so far. She's a quality player as well. She's another futsal fern. She was ripping it up for Southern last year, and then obviously has come up to Christchurch this year. And the other game was Northern Wybop, which Northern took out 2-0. And again, with the options available to Northern, you would have expected it to be a bit more. I think they often fall into that trap of having a lot of attacking talent, but not quite. There's not quite the cohesiveness there, or just something doesn't quite gel, and so you're expecting a heck of a lot more goals than what eventuates.
Am I mistaken? Because I think just my thought is that there were a lot more goals in the National Women's League last year. This is anecdotally also.
Yeah, I guess. I'm just trying to think. I mean, the Pride are always high scoring. With obviously this weekend just gone the exception. I think this round wasn't particularly high scoring.
But even last round, I don't recall it being no big blowouts like we occasionally see. Or am I just reading too much into it at the beginning of the season?
Yeah, I mean, round one, Cap got done 6-0 by the Pride, and then next game in, similar scoreline. Like, it wasn't the best start for Cap. So it's like, yeah, the goals are there. It's just, yeah.
It could be the top teams, Auckland, I'm guessing, Northern and Canterbury, haven't played against Central yet, basically. Because Central, the one that do tend to get smashed the most.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. It'd be quite interesting this weekend, though. Northern and the Pride are playing this weekend. So, you know, assuming the rest of the season goes as so far it has gone, it's pretty much a prelim for the final.
I mean, even with the National Women's League being fairly short, that's still, you know, it is shaping up as a fairly crucial game for choosing that final.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm just thinking back to last season, where the, you know, in regular season they had, you know, win a piece, because obviously the second part of the season, the Football Ferns were qualifying for the World Cup and the Olympics. So, you know, obviously all the Ferns kind of were out, and Annalie Longo at that point, who was, you know, incredibly crucial to the Pride, she was out as well, and that's when they kind of seemed to fall away a little bit, but still obviously did enough to get through to the final. This season she's not played the last couple of games, and they've still been looking pretty convincing. You know, so kind of my pick would just be the Pride are going to go undefeated this season.
Longo's injured?
Actually not too sure on that one, something I'm following up on, but yeah. I think there's been a couple of Ferns that haven't been playing. And obviously, Katie Duncan retired from, you know, all football last week as well. So there's a little bit of movement happening in there. And obviously today, the China Tour was announced, or the China Tournament rather, which will be happening in November. So that's some good prep for the Olympics as well.
Cool. So tell us about that.
So that is invitational just for the FIFA window. It is China, Brazil, Canada, and obviously us. So it's just a two-game setup, so we'll play China in the first game, Brazil and Canada will play in the second, and then just winners play winners, losers play losers for the second game.
So Brazil would be the highest ranked team, that Canada wouldn't be that far off them as well.
I think Canada are higher.
Yeah. Where's China?
They're not bad.
They're still higher than us. I think we're the lowest team.
And they're about 20th. Yep. Usually we sit around the 20th mark, somewhere around there, 25 to 15 sort of thing.
Yeah, I mean, this is pretty quality then. I mean,
when we talked about, you know, looking at the build-up for the Ferns going into the World Cup last year compared to, you know, what they're doing going into the Olympics, you know, for this year, it's that comprehensive preparation thing that kind of we were talking about before. It's what should have been happening a year ago that is thankfully happening now. It's the quality opposition, you know. There's a chance we might be playing Canada again, be a good sort of little revenge for what went down in the World Cup. Brazil, there's always good games between New Zealand and Brazil if that comes to pass. It's, you know, we're needing to take the Olympics seriously, and that's going to help.
It's certainly good to see, like, more than one game and against more than one team.
And it's high-quality opposition, which is what you need.
And also not against the Americans, which we seem to do a lot recently.
Yeah.
Which I think is a bit of a leveler and gave us a bit of a false expectation around the World Cup, especially. So it did, on my part, I thought if we could compete well against the Americans, we would be doing well. But it seemed like.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest false hope for the World Cup, though, was the England game. Where we sort of, obviously, first 20 minutes aside, you know, were very, very competitive. Obviously, Greg earned the goal when she did. And for me, like, going into that, I thought, oh, great, if we can do this now. Things looking good for the World Cup, and that obviously didn't come to pass.
False dawn.
Yeah,
very much so.
No, Dawn doesn't play.
Oh, God. No, leave that in and just put cricket noises after it, because Jesus.
Dead jokes.
Yeah.
So,
it's quite a good month for New Zealand football in November, to be fair, because obviously the All Whites have got the game in Dublin.
And 17th. Lithuania, I think, as well. Yeah.
When's the 17th?
So they assembled this week, today. Yeah, yesterday. They got their shirt presentation either yesterday or today. So they're about to head off. Yeah, which is, good.
Big football month then.
Yeah.
Should be interesting.
Cool.
So why don't we just leave it there? Obviously, game of the round, the Knicks.
Yeah, I think, well, for us it is. Probably the game of the round would be Victory versus Wanderers.
Meh.
Which they'll probably be footballing-wise should be the best one. But for us, if I'm going to watch any A-League at all this weekend, it'll be this our game. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's fair. We can, second round, we can hope that the season progresses tidily. Mm. And that Uffie knows exactly what Corrick is going to do.
Well, if he does know exactly what Corrick is going to do, it's not a question of knowing. It's
does he have the resources to stop him?
That's it. Yeah, exactly the point. Nail on the head.
Okay, well, we'll leave it there. Thanks for listening.
Cool.
Goodbye.
FOM brings you Football Operations Manager.
Oh, right.
Have you seen the formerly obese man meme?
No.
Okay. Look up the formerly obese man
meme. I am not looking up that on my work laptop. Thank you very much. Mythical magical number 9 brings you the invisible number 9 brings you. God, wouldn't that be a fantastic player to get?
That would be perfect.
Actually, no, because he's got to wear a jersey.
I mean, it would still be a great sight seeing this, like, jersey leaping up to the header.
You certainly wouldn't know where he's looking.
No.
Actually, yeah, true. I mean, a header,
still, yeah.
You'd literally have no idea.
Nothing to go on.
So what you want is basically an invisible Peter Crouch. Invisible Peter Crouch brings you.
Cam's meme collection brings you.
It's true. Leaving Berisha unmarked in the 6-yard box brings you.
Formation Irish dancing in the 6-yard box brings you.
David Ball doing everything but scoring brings you.
Getting sponsored by Sky and still not being able to log into my frickin' Sky Go account. So using a VPN to watch it through Albania, I think it was, brings you.
Falconing your vice captain who still can't score with the rebound brings you.